think about the Apostle Peter in Acts chapter 10. Before he baptizes Cornelius and his family, which is admitting them into the membership of the church, what does he do? He asks the other disciples around him, right? Is there anything that's withholding them? Right? Tell me if there is, right? Tell me if you have objections, right? He just doesn't unilaterally just do it, but he asks. If the apostles did that, how much more should the elders of the church and the church as a whole do that together? Here's a quote I want to read for you. John Gill says this: as the original constitution of churches is by consent and confederation, so the admission of new members to them is upon the same footing. As no man is to be forced into a church, or by any compulsory methods brought into it, so neither can he force himself into one. He has no right to come into a church or depart from it when he pleases. But the one and the other, his coming into and departure from it, must be with consent. A man may propose himself to be a member of the church, but it is at the option of the church whether they will receive him. So Saul essayed to join himself to disciples, that is, he proposed to be a member with them, but they first refused him, fearing he was not a true disciple because of his former conduct. But when they had a testimony of him from Barnabas and perceived that he was a partaker of the grace of God and was sound in the faith of Christ, they admitted him. And he was with them going out and coming in. And it is but reasonable a church should be satisfied in these points as to the persons received into their communion, not only by a testimony of their becoming lives, but by giving an account of what God has done for their souls and a reason of the hope that is in them, as well as by expressing their agreement with them in their articles of faith. John Gill goes on to say this: the reception of a member into church communion must be by mutual consent. The person received must give up him or herself to walk with the church in holy fellowship, and the church must readily receive such in the Lord. It must be a voluntary act on both sides. And if there is a pastor, the person must be received by him in the name and with the consent of the church. And if not, by a brother appointed by the church for that purpose, the token of which is by giving the right hand of fellowship. So we see here the practice of our forebears, of the early particular Baptists, is that the admittance into membership was an act of consent of the whole church, right? Not just the elders, but the elders along with the congregation. Remember, again, a voluntary society. They get to decide who comes in. They get to decide who joins with them, who they're going to be worshiping with. And so they should have a voice in that. Now, John Gill goes on to state this: there are but two ways, though, of going out of a church. Either by a dismission from it, or by an excommunication of it. So this is going to bring us to the second thing that I want to look at, which is removing by consent and concurrence. Part of me wants to start off by asking a question, but the other part of me says don't ask it because it'd just be more confusing. So I'm going to ask a rhetorical question. Don't answer it, please. If you have a gospel preaching Bible believing church and you are a member of it, is it ever okay for you to resign membership? No. No. John Gill, what does he say here? There are but two ways of going out of a church. Either by a dismission or by excommunication. we live in a very autonomous society. We feel as if we have the right and ability to come and go as we please, to do whatever it is that we want to do, to take our family here or there, that we are under no authority really other than ourselves. But that's not what you enter into when you enter into a church covenant. There is an authority over you, all right, that is the whole church. And just as you do not enter into the church but by the consent of the church, neither do you leave the church but by the consent of the church. Right? So I want you to hear what I'm saying. There are reasons, and we'll go over them, why you can leave a church or why you should leave a church. But what we're also going to go over is it ought to always be done in a commendable way, for commendable reasons, and to a commendable church. Okay? There is no, I don't like the pastor here, I'm just going to resign membership and leave. But are we so used to that in American culture, in American churches? For some reason, it only goes one way, right? We make the church consent to bring you in, but then it's a free-for-all. You just leave whenever you want. You just resign membership for whatever reason. It doesn't matter what reason. You just leave. And churches just let it go and let it go on. But we'll see that was never the practice of our forebears. Right? They didn't know what resignation is. In fact, Benjamin Keach, a signatory of the Second London Confession of Faith, of those who leave a church, he says this: of such that cause divisions or unduly separate themselves from the church, this I find is generally asserted by all congregational divines or worthy men, that no person has the authority to dismember himself. What is he saying? No person in the church has the authority to resign his membership from a church and just walk away. That's what they confessed. But we're so used to resignation, right? We think that it's fine. He says this: he cannot, without great sin, translate himself from one church to another, but ought to have a dismission from the church where he is a member, provided that the church, again, here's the qualification to can you ever resign membership from a church, right? Provided the church is orderly constituted, nothing being wanting as to any essential of salvation or of church communion, but if not, yet he ought to endeavor to get his orderly dismission. Okay, so, you know, there's a caveat. Can you resign membership from a church? Well, sure. If it's a false church, you can go, I can't remain here, I have to leave. But if it's a gospel-preaching, Bible-believing church, you can leave, but there's a right way to leave. And it's not just resigning membership, because think about it. You're always to be under the care of Christ and the church. If you resign membership from a church, you are putting yourself back into the world outside of the care of the church. You have given yourself now over to the God of this world, no longer under the authority and the watchful eye of the church. Right? If you are a member of a Christian church, there ought to never be a point in your life that you're not. Right? You want to leave here. Let's say you're moving for a job, right? That's one of the reasons for leaving a church, right? Hey, I can't find good work here. I'm gonna move to another state. But okay, well, then let's transfer your membership there. So you're always a member of a Christian church. You're always under the watchful care of an overseer and an under shepherd. You're never left out in the world by yourself. And this is what the particular Baptists practice. This is what you see us practicing when Ben or Julius come to the church and I'm reading letters of transfer for them. Right? Because we're practicing what the particular Baptists have always confessed and practiced. Right? That there is a right way to leave. That's by dismission. That's the orderly way to leave. Or there's the disorderly way, which is just leaving, resigning membership. And as we'll look at next week, probably, disorderly leaving of a church ultimately can lead to excommunication. Because there's two kinds of excommunication. Right? There's excommunication for gross and slanderous sin that is unrepentant of. And there's also what we call excommunication by exclusion. You have excluded yourself from the membership of the church. You refuse to hear the church. And you refuse to repent of your sin in doing so. And ultimately, what that ends with is the church pronouncing, ultimately, what you yourself have pronounced by leaving the church without hearing it, and that is that you are not a Christian to begin with at all. And that's what the church eventually has to do. As John Owen says, to let someone resign membership or to leave a church in a disorderly way is to partake of that sin with them. Right? If someone says, I just want to resign membership, I don't like so-and-so in the church, I'm out of here. Right? That is to resign membership in a disorderly way. And then that's where the church, and we'll go through instances of this, but that's where the church labors, right, to show this person that sin, to bring them back into membership. But ultimately, if they refuse to heed the church's discipline, right, ultimately, we'll see it ends with excommunication. Right? Excommunication by exclusion. It's ultimately, right, they're putting themselves out of the church. And so it's just our responsibility over, in a lapsed period of time to simply declare what they themselves have declared by their leaving in the way that they have. And that's ultimately that they've gone out from us because they're not truly of us. I want to read for us a couple more things here. Here, the Cambridge Platform, which is a congregational document which the Savoy Declaration and the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith use. In chapter 13 of the Cambridge Platform, it begins this way. Church members may not remove or depart from the church, and so no one from another as they please, nor without just and weighty cause, but ought to live and dwell together, for as much as they are commanded not to forsake the assembling of themselves together. Such departure tends to the dissolution and ruin of the body, as the pulling of stones and pieces of timber from the building and members from the natural body tend to the destruction of the whole. It is therefore the duty of church members in such times and places, when counsel may be had, to consult with the church whereof they are members about their removal, that accordingly they have their approbation, may be encouraged or otherwise desist. They who are joined with consent should not depart without consent, except forced thereunto. Okay. I got caught in sin, so I want to leave the church. Right? That's a reason people leave. Is that a good reason to leave a church? But people do it all the time, don't they? Or they're unwilling to be reconciled in the church. And so they go, I don't want to reconcile with this person, and they leave. Is that a reason to leave a church? Also, even though there are reasons to leave a church, the assumption always, though, is that before you leave, you have dealt with whatever those issues are with the elders of the church before you leave. That I exhaust every option to not leave before I leave. When you can. So like, you know, for example, a reason to leave would be my edification. You know, that can be a fine reason to leave. You believe your family is not being edified. that you are not being edified, that there is something really lacking in the ministry there. Maybe it's very, you know, very shallow. You're not being fed at all. And you've been, but what you shouldn't do is send an email going, oh, I resign because I'm not being fed, and yet never have spoken to the pastor about not being fed. Right? You ought to have brought these things up that there might be repair, that there might be reconciliation, that there might be some help or some discovering what's going on, or perhaps there's other underlying issues why there's not edification going on, instead of just departing. Here, Benjamin Keach, I'll close with these. He gives just 16 short reasons why someone should not leave the church this way, and we ought to seriously consider these ourselves. First, he says it's not decent, much less an orderly going away, but very unmannerly, and a kind of running away. Two, such a departure is not approved of in families or even civil societies. How do you think it would be approved in the church? It destroys the relation of pastor and people. For what may be done by one individual person may be done by all. Right? You see one person leave that way, and then everyone else thinks they can start leaving that way as well. You see one person show disrespect to the elders of the church that way, everyone thinks they can disrespect the elders that way. Four, what liberty in this kind belongs to the sheep belongs to the shepherd. Much more he may then also leave his flock. Right? So he's saying, if that liberty belongs to you, just come and go as you please, so too does the shepherd. And who would be okay with that? Nobody. If I just, one Sunday I just email you guys, sorry, won't be here anymore, decided, don't really care for you guys, want to be somewhere else. What would you think of me if I did that? Five, it's breaking covenant with Christ and with the congregation, and therefore a great immorality, he being under obligation to abide steadfastly with the church. Six, it's a schism, for if there be any such thing in the world, it's of particular societies. Seven, it's a despising of the government of the church. Eight, it's a particular member's assuming the keys of the kingdom. Or he says, rather, it's a stealing of them. Remember that the keys have been given not to one individual, given to the church, but when you just leave that way, you say, I'm stealing these keys and I'm doing what I want with them. Well, no, the power hasn't been given to you. The power has been given to the congregation as a whole. Number nine, there is as much reason persons should come into a church when they please without asking consent as depart when they please. Right? So they're saying, you don't come in that way, so you shouldn't depart that way. 10, it's very evil and unkind of another church to receive someone who has done that as not doing as they would or should be dealt with. Right? I mean, think about how many churches receive people who have left churches that way and haven't even asked the question, where are you coming from? Why'd you leave? What's the issue? Let me reach out to the pastor and see. 11, such practices can issue in nothing else than the breach and confusion of all particular churches and make them like parishes. 12, such departures cannot be pleaded for in the least, but upon the notion of a Catholic visible church, wherein all members and officers are run into one organized church which will and must introduce a coordinate, if not a subordinate, pastoral government by combination of elders over all the churches and therefore by synods and classes. 13, it is like a leak in a ship, which if not speedily stopped, will sink at last. Right, this is why we'll look at examples, but for those who would leave a church, for example, someone wanted to be looked at as a gifted brother, and he felt the church was taking too long. We have an example, I believe it's 17th century. The gentleman leaves to go just start his own church because the church is taking too long. And you know what they said to do? Go get that man. Because that's a false preacher, that's a false church he's starting, and you're to do everything you can to stop him from doing that. Right? Because it's a leak in the ship. If not stopped, the sink, it will sink at last. Right? He starts doing that. All of a sudden, other people start doing it as well. 14, it tends to anarchy, putting an arbitrary power in every member. 15, it breaks all bonds of love and raises the greatest animosities between brethren and churches. Isn't that true? I mean, think of all the disdain people have for one another, even churches versus churches, because you receive these people into church membership when you shouldn't have. 16, it is a great argument of some guilt lying on the party. Thus the doctor again said, it is no more in the just power of a particular member to dissolve his church relation than in a man to kill himself. But by his said withdrawal, he does schismatically rend himself from communion and so separate himself sinfully. Just to close, John Owen says, when persons are members of churches by mutual confederation or express personal consent, causeless departure from them is an evil liable unto many aggravations. Okay? So that's going to bring us to a close this morning. We're going to come back then in 2 weeks, and we'll look at then reasons to leave, and then we're going to also then look at what happens to those who leave in a disorderly manner. Okay? So that brings us to a close then this morning.